This is the Quality News Network. Pakistan is in crisis and the world in shock, reacting to today's assassination of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. Minutes after her first official political rally this morning in Rawalpindi, the assassin shot her, then blew himself up, killing at least 20 other people and injuring dozens. World leaders reacted quickly with sadness and condemnation for the crime. The United Nations Security Council immediately voted unanimously to condemn Bhutto's assassination. Political leaders from around the world spoke of her commitment to democratic reform and bravery. Speaking from his Crawford Ranch in Texas, President Bush blamed extremists who are trying to undermine Pakistan's democracy. Mr. Bush contacted President Musharraf and demanded those responsible for Bhutto's death be brought to justice. Pakistan's President Pervez Musharraf declared a three-day period of mourning for Bhutto. Some political experts say supporters of Musharraf could have been the assassins, but Al-Qaeda militants could also take responsibility. Earlier this morning, supporters of President Musharraf opened fire at another political rally, killing or wounding at least seven followers of another opposition leader, former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. Bhutto led the most popular political party in Pakistan, a pro-democracy group expected to win parliamentary elections set for January 8th. Leaders fear Bhutto's death will destabilize the already fractured region. A two-hour meeting between Israeli and Palestinian leaders appears to have produced a breakthrough in peace talks. The disagreement over territory taken by Israel in the 1967 war was not solved, but the two sides decided it should not hold up peace negotiations. Police say there is evidence a Siberian tiger was provoked before attacking three young men at the San Francisco Zoo. It appears they threw things at the animal, and at least one victim dangled his foot into the cat's enclosure. A 17-year-old was killed and two adults badly injured. Police shot and killed the 300-pound female tiger. The National Rifle Association is planning to file a federal lawsuit against New Orleans mayor and police superintendent for collecting guns from residents during Hurricane Katrina. The NRA says they seized the guns and left residents defenseless. Authorities say they only took guns left behind in the chaos. This is QNN.
Hi, I'm Brian Gingrich of Monterey Mattress Company. The only way to travel is by using the very best, and the very best in a major sleep product is any mattress from Monterey Mattress Company. Literally serving all parts of the world, we have been building the finest latex foam and innerspring mattresses for well over 20 years. Using our world-famous hotels as a measuring stick, you'll more often hear the name Monterey Mattress, as we supply over 100 resort hotels in this area. Far exceeding industry standards, these mattresses are available to you at factory prices. In addition to the local recognition, Monterey Mattress Company has been shipping beds worldwide to the many visitors who have experienced a great night's sleep here. This is the ultimate endorsement enjoyed by very few businesses. Monterey Mattress Company. We simply build the best, whether for your home or world-renowned resorts. Visit us today at 1714 Contra Costa in Sand City or on the World Wide Web at MontereyMattress.com. Sleep like a panda bear.
The FDA has recalled diabetes test strips produced by Bayer for use in their Contour TS blood glucose meters. Authorities say the strips are defective and result in higher than accurate readings. Volvo is recalling 125,000 trucks sold in the U.S. The world's second largest truck manufacturer says there's a serious problem with the main circuit breaker in the lighting system. Apple and 20th Century Fox will soon announce an agreement permitting consumers to rent the film studio's recent releases by downloading them from Apple's iTunes store. Due to the collapse of the subprime mortgage market, Citigroup, Merrill Lynch, and J.P. Morgan Chase are expected to have to write down an additional $34 billion in securities that are tied to that failing market. Companies ordered fewer durable goods than expected in November, a sign that the U.S. economic slowdown is spreading beyond the housing market. The Commerce Department said November orders increased 0.1%, much less than forecast. Light sweet crude is trading at $96.62 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. Gold is at $831.80 an ounce. That's up $2.30. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow tumbled 192 points, the NASDAQ was down 48, and the S&P 500 was off 21 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! So I hear down in Crawford, Texas, it went down a little bit like this. Hey, Laura, go get that little slip of paper from the Oval Office pool. See, did I have second day after Christmas for when Benazir Butto got off? What? I didn't? Dang. Uncle Dick wins every time. You know, is that so hard to believe? Does that smack so much of fantasy? Not to me. Not to me. There are some headlines out there today. And they just blow me away, these headlines. Let's try one on for size. Assassination shocks, outrages U.S. presidential candidates. Which ones? Who was shocked? Who was surprised? Outrage? Well, okay, I'll buy outrage. But shocked or surprised? Uh-uh. No, no. There's a military thug running the country that we pay billions of dollars a year to, who knew he was on the verge of getting his butt waxed, who also happens to be a very close personal ally of the Bush administration in the war on terror, who also happens to control a nuclear arsenal of some considerable danger. Now, we don't need to be talking about Pakistan's nuclears, Bob. We need to be talking about Iran's nuclears that they don't have, but might want to someday, and that didn't need to kill Iran. Shocked? What happened today was, it was a pitch on a one ball two strike count. They'd already tried to blow her up once before down in Karachi. And this time she was in the belly of the beast. She was at Rawalpindi, the heart and soul of the military industrial complex of Pakistan. Pervez Musharraf's stomping grounds, if you will. She was, in a word, she was like something out of the 23rd Psalm. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy. No, you can leave out the goodness and mercy part, because they just blew her up. And you know how it went down. When I first heard about it, it was, you know, she'd been killed in a suicide bomb attack. But no, she was shot first, and then the bomb went off. This wasn't just your everyday, ordinary suicide bombing. This was a hit. It was a professional hit. And when you're in a country where there's lots of religious fanatics like Saudi Arabia or Pakistan or the United States of America, you can always get the hitman to take himself out by telling him that whichever god happens to obtain at the time will love him better if he does. Right? Sure. So then you see, then there's another headline. What's our next headline here? Oh, yeah. Bush condemns quote-unquote cowardly attack on Butto. this just offends all my sense of right and wrong and being at least moderately dignified in use of the language. Cowardly attack on Budo? You can call it whatever. You know, he's George. You can call it cabbage. And give him a day or so, and he probably will. Cowardly? No. No. The killer used a gun and then blew himself up, and I don't see how you call that an act of cowardice. It was an act of murder. Probably state-sponsored, because after all, Nawaz Sharif, the other opposition candidate to Pervez Musharraf, yeah, they attacked one of his political rallies either yesterday or today. Also. This is brutal business. But to call it a cowardly attack, no. No, cowardice was not part of the equation. Avarice? That ends in ICE, too. Avarice? That may have been part of it. They may have, for all we know, the family may now be rich. You know, one more empty chair at the end of Eid feast, but richer. And, of course, the fact that we have to care about this says something about us as and our place in the world. Had we held fast to George Washington's admonition that we avoid foreign entanglements, this might not mean so much. Had we held fast to George Washington's admonition to avoid foreign entanglements, this might not have dropped an anvil on the stock market out of the sky. You know, the Wall Street's getting to resemble a lot of Wile E. Coyote. You know, just looking up and putting up the little umbrella with the little sign that says, help, as the big rock or the anvil or the piano or whatever falls out of the sky on him. Poof. 192 points today, I think, on news of Benazir Bhutto's assassination. She came from a political family. She was run out of office by a military man, again, Pervez Musharraf, with designs on running the country. He did that because there was precedent for it. Benazir Bhutto's father had been Prime Minister of Pakistan as well, and he had been hanged by a military dictator who seized power. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like father, like son, you know. And like father, like daughter in another way. This is disturbing in the extreme. And it does matter what happens in Pakistan, because we are involved in foreign entanglements. I'm not often prone to just reading you willy-nilly entire postings, but I've got one here I want to share with you. It comes from a blog called Words of Power. Richard Power is the author, and he says, Osama bin Laden is safe in Pakistan. Benazir Bhutto was not. Osama bin Laden is alive and free in Pakistan. Daniel Pearl is not. Neither Iran nor Iraq have nuclear weapons, but Pakistan does. This is the poisoned fruit of Beltway Stan's decades of geopolitical folly in the Muslim world and of the neocon wet dreams and foolish military adventures of the last 7 years in particular. Mr. Power says, I followed the story of Benazir Bhutto for many years. She did not end up in exile because of corruption. There is no head of state in the world, anywhere in the world, who could not be successfully stained with the broad brush of corruption. Indeed, you cannot achieve power without exposing yourself to that charge. She was the Don Siegelman of Pakistan. Now, there's an interesting comparison. She ended up in exile because she was too secular for the religious extremists and their backers in Saudi Arabia, and she was too democratic for the militarists and their backers in Beltwaystan. She was also the first woman to rule in the modern Muslim world, and tragically probably the last for some time. When she returned to Pakistan a few weeks ago, I kept asking myself, why? She certainly knew she would most likely be killed. This morning, as I heard the news of her assassination, the answer struck me, and it came with a bitter twist of irony. Every time you ask yourself why U.S. political leaders will not stand up to the Bush-Cheney regime, why impeachment is off the table, why the betrayal of U.S. secret agent Valerie Plame's covert identity goes unavenged, why those who looked the other way while 9/11 went down, then lied us into war with Iraq and attempted to lie us into war with Iran, continue to occupy positions of power and privilege, why violations of FISA, FOIA, the Geneva Accords, the Bill of Rights have gone on unchecked, why no one is under criminal investigation for obstruction of justice in the firing of the U.S. attorneys or the theft of elections in 2000, 2002, and 2004. Remember the beautiful face, passionate heart, and eloquent tongue of Benazir Bhutto. Remember, too, Itzhak Rabin, and Jack and Bobby Kennedy, and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and Omar Torrijos, and Anwar Sadat, and the answer will come to you. They do not stand up because they are afraid. And Benazir Bhutto was not afraid. The people who... Well, lovely writing from Words of Power. Words-of-power.blogspot.com. Lovely words. Far more significant truth. But it's not just the people who won't oppose George Bush who are cowards. George Bush, too, is a coward. And that is why any reference by him to someone being a coward always raises my hackles. The sun has never risen, you see, on a day in George Bush's world when that sunlight did not strike the face of a coward in the form of George W. Bush. Ms. Bhutto had security, and no small amount of it. But she also recognized that there was a very real threat to her, but she was also committed to her countrymen. And she went to the rallies that she scheduled, and people got around her. And mostly she survived. It's one of those situations where there's no second act. You lose once, you lose it all. She lost today. But each and every time she stepped forward boldly and courageously in an attempt to drag Pakistan kicking and screaming into the 16th century. And perhaps in a few more years, the 21st. But we, what do we have? We have a president who jumps out of his skin at the sight of his own shadow, who falls over dead drunk in the White House residence and bangs his head on the coffee table, only to be awakened when he's licked in the face by his dog, who can't ride a bicycle without endangering his entire Secret Service contingent, and who more than anything else is so terrified of the American people that he cannot even be permitted to see dissent from his first inauguration to this very day. The American people, never mind assassination attempts, the American people who disagree with George Bush aren't even allowed to get near him. The civil people, the sane people, the ordinary people, the people who feel like they are Americans every bit as damned good as George W. Bush are not allowed near him. For he fancies himself royalty. And he has a royal's attitude about the commoners. You know, you, me, us, the peons, the serfs, the peasants, those people. So this is the beginning of our show this evening. Your thoughts are more than welcome. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you have an unlimited long-distance dialing plan, please use it. You'll save us a little bit of money. And dial 304-658-5453. I'll get to the phone calls as quickly as I possibly can, and it always is nice if the phone calls aren't stacked up 10 minutes before the end of the show so we don't have to do auctioneer talk radio. But please, please, if anyone dares use that cowardice business or remarks to you that he said it was cowardice, please. Don't let that go by. Don't let that go unanswered. Point out that the single greatest coward in a leadership position in the entire world is George W. Bush. Because, not because of politics, not because of your feelings about Republican economic policies or right-wing religion industry freaks, because you would say it about any person who was like George W. Bush. Because George W. Bush is and has been and always will be a coward. And off to the phones we go. And that's a busy signal. And here we go. Hi, who have I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan. How are you, dear?
Well, back to rain.
Well, at least you won't be going snowblind in Columbia City.
Well, that's true. When I got up this morning and found out about this, first thing I thought of was, like you, it was Mushar had her killed.
Oh, yeah. This is a rub out.
Yeah.
We'll never find out, you know, some...
Oh, no.
Because it would completely tear Pakistan apart, and remember
that... Oh, it's going to tear Pakistan apart anyway.
I fear you may be right.
And, you know, here they are shooting 70 nukes. The reason I called in is because you mentioned... George Bush being a coward. Well, he comes by it honestly. Let's face it, he's the son of bailout Bush. Come on.
Well, he is that.
You know. But yes, they're both incredible cowards. And it shows. Here's this little tiny slip of a woman. Well, she wasn't that tiny. But here's this woman. And I love the Republican attitude towards women, you know. They're too dumb and too frail to accomplish anything. This woman goes out and in a Muslim country ends up running the stupid country. And then she's got the sheer balls to go back into what she knows is a death trap.
Yeah.
For whatever reason she did it, she did it.
And I think most, I personally think her reasons were noble.
Yeah. You will never see a Republican have that kind of courage.
No, nor will you see a Republican pointing out the fact that this was an assassination that by our own ineptitude we helped happen. Because we,
yes.
You know, we were so desperate that we fell for that old piece of stupid geopolitical rhetoric right after the September 11th attacks on the Trade Center and the Pentagon, that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and somehow or another decided that that little beady-eyed freak, Pervez Musharraf, who looks more like a rat than anything human, that he was our buddy. But, you know, those are the kind of people that George Bush has always thought were his buddies. You know what I mean?
Did you see the Time article? Where Bhutto's death leaves the United States?
No.
Okay. First of all, a former advisor to Bhutto, who is now a Boston professor, is blaming Washington in large part for her death, because people like him have been making specific requests for intervention for security for her. And Washington has been saying, oh, Musharraf will take care of it. Yeah, he took care of it all right.
Yeah, he took care of it real big. And I'm sure he sent a message to her right before the bomb went off that said, you know, tell her I always liked her.
Yeah.
It's only business.
Yeah, here's a quote. It's quite clear that Musharraf does not want an election. You can quote me. He is the one who has constantly wanted anybody who can threaten him or his power out, unquote. And, of course, the bugaboo that they're coming up with is, wait for it, Al-Qaeda.
Oh, I saw that. It may have been, or it could have been Al-Qaeda. And the thing is, that's the beauty of a fluid political dynamic like you have in Pakistan, because the so-called, well, you know, the religious fanatics don't believe, they think that she ought to be in a house somewhere in a beekeeper suit. And
yeah.
It drives them absolutely run over dog crazy that she's running around and, you know, showing her face and stuff in public, for heaven's sakes. So you can, you know, they've got that going for them. And on the other hand, that's good for Pervez Musharraf, because he can say, oh, yeah, well, you know, I bet we can catch him if you give us $2 billion more dollars there, George.
Yeah. When all you have to do is look at the presidential palace.
Yeah.
But we'll never be able to prove it. It's like we'll never be able to prove that dear George was complicit in 9/11. I don't say he was actually planting explosives. I'm just saying he said, this guy's planning on doing something. I'm just going to sit here and watch.
This looks interesting. I wonder if I could make a buck off of it.
Yeah, let's get a pool.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
I know. Frustrating, isn't it?
Well,
and it's sad that we have to give a damn, Susan.
Yeah. Show post that I put up for today's show on the blog is titled, "And the Train Wreck Goes On."
Yeah, it does. And, of course, there are those out there who are saying, well, it's not for sure it was Musharraf. I mean, people have tried to kill him, too. Ah, but he survived.
Yeah. And it's interesting that all of his opponents are being targeted. But the train wreck I was referring to is you've got a country that's coming apart, the nuclear country. You don't need to worry about Iran. Or even North Korea. You need to worry about Pakistan.
A little bit.
Because we gave the stuff to them. We gave them the missiles. We gave them the nukes.
Well, no. AQ Khan worked out the nuclear stew formula.
And, you know, here's this country with all these nukes.
Now AQ Khan also gave the nuclear stuff, the knowledge and everything, to North Korea. Yeah, this is our bosom friend and ally, Pakistan.
Yeah.
Now, see, there are normal people there that I do feel kindly toward. The lawyers and civil servants who marched in the streets when Musharraf tried to shut down the judicial processes of
exactly.
the country. These people want civil, rational, representative government in Pakistan. They don't want to make And you know what? Remember all that hand wringing and arm twisting about, and George came out and said, General Musharraf has promised that he will take off the uniform in. He will take off the uniform in January.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't care if he runs naked through the streets of Karachi or Islamabad or Rawalpindi or anywhere else. Don't much matter.
Yep.
And when you don't have any competition left, you know.
A skunk is still a skunk.
Exactly. Susan, thanks so much, dear.
You're more than welcome. Love to everybody.
Back at you. Bye now.
Bye.
And onward. Hi, who have I got?
Well, you've got David in Tennessee.
Hey, how are you?
Doing quite well. Man, it's cold and gloomy, but oh well.
Yeah, it was real gray here to do. You get the idea.
Never mind Al-Qaeda. Never mind any of the rest of that stuff. It's Musharraf. That's the guy for two reasons. She was not as much of an enemy and a threat to fundamentalism as she was to the Pakistani army. And that's where, you know, her contract was written. Now, additionally, I heard on the radio this afternoon, and I'm sure it'll be reported somewhere. pardon me. A friend of 25 years standing from her time in colleges in the U.S. and in England, and I don't remember the gentleman's name, but she had only been back in Pakistan for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, less than a month, and this guy opens up this email from her, and she says, now don't be alarmed, but please publish this upon my death. If I am killed in this campaign or under circumstances that you can easily identify, please publish this. And without going through this long, involved grocery list of what she did not get from Musharraf, what she got was a de facto death sentence. He made sure that any request she had for special vehicles, like, for instance, any sort of armoring or any sort of bulletproof glass, which he could easily have made available to her, those were denied.
I am terribly, terribly, terribly sorry that we are unable to help you.
Right, yeah. So, instance after instance, she was aware of that, and not a day went by that some mid-level government official didn't either email her or call her or drop by to see her. You know, we really can't protect you like we would like to do. You know, our campaigning is so personal, and you must be out there for the people, and we understand it, but try as we might, you know we can't possibly protect you. Don't you think you should go back to Dubai with your husband and your children and have a nice life, or just have a life? So she laid it all out for this guy that was a longtime friend. If anything happens to me, start with Musharraf and stop with him, because he made sure she was open, vulnerable, available, and the only reason she didn't die the day she got back there was that, you know, it was an inept attempt. But they got better at it. So...
Yeah, it was a hit.
Oh, without question.
And the idea of Pakistan's nukes getting loose really does cause me some consternation. But
I've had that conversation several times, Bob.
Yeah, and I've been hollering about Pakistan being a nuclear terror threat since 2003. But you know, so what? If I'd said that they weren't and I'd been a right-wing pundit, I'd be a millionaire by now. They pay. Did you know they pay right-wingers to be wrong all the time? But
I noticed that, and it seems like the wronger you are, the richer you are.
Yeah, it's nice. It's great work if you can get it. So all that progressives like me and others like me here on the Horn and elsewhere can do is, you know, be the lone voice crying in the wilderness. But that's neither here nor there. While I worry about loose nukes in Pakistan, My heart aches, David. It literally aches for the people there who want to lead normal lives, who want to get up at 8 and come home at 5 and do their job in the law office or in the at the post office or at the Jiffy, whatever, you know, the Islamabad Jiffy Lube or whatever, and lead a normal life in a normal country.
They want to take the camel in for the lube job and just, you know, come home and have a cup of tea. All right, that's bad humor.
No, but I, right. Yeah, no, yeah. You know, go to work at the call center, do some debt collection on deadbeat Americans who can't make their credit card payments, and come home.
Exactly.
My heart aches for those people because they want a normal country.
And they're acting so much like good Republicans because, you know, they just cleaned out their entire relatively functional judicial system so that the courts could be packed with Musharraf's pals. Oh, gee, does that sound familiar? And I was watching BBC America News over the weekend, Monday night, Tuesday night, and there's this thing that beginning about a year ago, if you were anything of a free thinker or if you were anything of a writer or journalist that said things that Musharraf didn't want to hear, you would disappear. And this one newspaperman was, you know, he was at home one day, he was at work the next morning, never been seen since. And this, I don't know how they managed to do it, but the BBC managed to get this interview filmed between the man's wife, and she had her oldest child with her, a son, and they were standing in front of this very agitated, very don't bother me with this stuff, and the guy admitted on camera, yes, he was a subversive and we had to detain him. But you can't do that. It's against our rules. And suddenly an American accent said, sir, on what charge? And this guy turns around to the American accented voice and says, we're just using the same techniques you use in your country. He's a threat to our security, so we detained him, and we don't need to tell anybody anything about this man. But he's no longer a threat. We may talk later. Now, woman, you should leave before I call a soldier. And I thought, well, this is nice. It's beginning to be thrown back in our face.
And why shouldn't it be? How many liberals, progressives, decent people in this country have warned time and again that this kind of stuff is going to bite us in the butt? And of course, you know, now the you know, already today. And you know, the short attention span and an even shorter memory simply amazes me. What's the slug on this? Yeah, from a right-wing news website, nuclear al-Qaeda close after Bhutto. Well, gee, who you reckon made that happen? Was it us peace-loving, you know, put the daisies in the gun barrels liberals over here in America that made that happen? Yeah, I don't think so. No.
I think so.
Was it maybe John Bolton with that, you know, porn mustache? Oh, give more money to Musharraf. He's a great guy. Yeah.
What is it? We've been sending it over there at like $10 billion a year for whatever it was he was supposed to be doing, and he didn't even do that very well.
I think that could have bought a couple of up-armored cars that could be, nah, no, I'm not going to give them to her. They'll just get blown up. I know. I've got the plans.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, it might take us 7 or 8 attempts to kill her.
Oh, here's a nice headline slug for you, David, from Reuters. Negroponte says Pakistan needs democratic transition.
Oh, well, he's just the guy to facilitate that one. Well,
why don't we just ship him over to our embassy there and we can get some death squads wandering the streets?
Exactly. If the highway turns pink as Peter drives by, anytime Negroponte goes anywhere, it turns black or bleeds.
Yeah.
One or the other.
Well, you know, there is a certain irony in the fact that the translation of his name does mean black bridge.
That man is so evil.
He's sort of a bridge to grim death, isn't he?
Yeah, he doesn't even actually, you know, need the Grim Reaper costume or accoutrements. He's pretty well got it all taken care of.
But, you know, to the same extent that the Bush administration, after it, you know, they were forced to admit that Iran wasn't trying to build any bombs, then came out the next day and said, this just proves that we need to bomb Iran. They are so brazen. They are so, they're such political hussies, if you will, that they'll just slide right past this, David. I mean, look, the United States said Pakistan needed a democratic political transition on Wednesday after President Pervez Musharraf's government blocked former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif's return from exile. Huh? You know, this is September the 12th, David.
Oh, I know.
September the 12th, 2007. Authorities dispatched Sharif back into exile on Monday, despite his having Supreme Court clearance to return to Pakistan. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State John Negroponte, on a visit scheduled months ago to meet Musharraf and other officials, said Sharif's treatment was, quote, an internal Pakistani political and legal matter. Well.
That's our boy.
That's the guy. So so American politicians are expressing shock.
Shocked, I tell you. How could such a thing? Oh, the revelation of it all. Oh.
Round up the usual suspects.
Exactly. Oh, I guarantee you that before it won't take another 5 or 6 days. Because talk about the ability to round up the usual suspects.
There'll be a couple of hangings, maybe a shooting, maybe a beheading. I don't know what they do there.
No. Well, first will come 7 or 8 ragtag-looking guys, and they'll have signs in English around their neck. I am Al-Qaeda. I did it. You know, it'll only take a few days of those enhanced techniques that Bush is so fond of to have 7 or 8 usual suspects sign in blood, literally.
You know, it's a little bit tired. And I think I've told it on the air before, but yeah, those enhanced techniques remind me of that story about the cabin that burns down in the forest.
Good. I haven't heard it.
Yeah, a little vacation cabin burns down in the national forest, and since it's federal property, the FBI goes in and conducts a year and a half long investigation and comes out with a 2,000-page report that says we think that the perpetrator was a bear. After that, still being federal property, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms goes in, conducts a 6-month investigation, burns the rebuilt cabin to the ground, and issues a 500-page report saying, we're sure it was a bear who burned down the first cabin, but we got him in the second fire. So, such being the case, the West Virginia State Police move in, and one lone trooper walks off into the woods. And out of the woods, you hear this howling and screaming. And eventually, the trooper walks back out with a raccoon in handcuffs, bruised and bleeding from every orifice, screaming to high heaven, I confess, I'm a bear.
I like it. I wish it weren't so true.
That's us now.
Incredibly.
I mean, they'll have some little shoeshine boy from Karachi.
Of some village of 85 people.
Yeah, he'll be wearing his official Al Qaeda hoodie and his official Al Qaeda tennis shoes.
Precisely.
Clutching an autographed photograph with a paragraph on the back and circles and arrows of Osama bin Laden screaming, you know, death to Bhutto, I done it, I done it, I done it, and he'll still be spitting out the water from the waterboarding he just got. And he'll be a little green around the gills from the Die Hard and the jumper cables treatment.
And a little black and a little blue and maybe a little red in a few places.
I confess, I'm a bear.
I like that one. I like that one a lot.
Well, the nice thing is you can always make it work somewhere else. It's works in the Great Smoky Mountains, and
of course.
you know, you just transpose Tennessee State Police or Highway Patrol or whatever, and there you go.
Oh, yeah. Knox County Sheriff.
Well, that works.
Well, I'm going to let some others hold forth, but I wanted to make sure I got that in there. But in her own voice, in an email to a friend of 25 years standing, start with Musharraf and finish, because he was doing everything he could to make sure today happened.
But you know what? Did she have any? She didn't have any choice, did she? I mean, if you think about the kind of person she was, David, she didn't have any choice.
Well, people have been telling her not to be involved in politics in that country for 20 years. It was the man today on the radio interview that I heard barely was able to keep his voice from breaking. He said that he had spoken to her within the last few days, please, you know, you've got to stop this, and she had confidence. She felt it was her destiny to run the country, and that she was, you know, she was a religious person, felt what she was protected by her variety of God, and that no matter what, she was in God's hands, et cetera, and it was all going to work out. But he said, oh, no, everybody that knows her has tried to remind her, talk her out of being there, but she, above all else on earth, wanted to be the person that freed Pakistan. But not now.
No, but she could not go into her old age, could not sit comfortably in retirement in Dubai, knowing that she had walked away from people who believed in her to stand up and do what was right.
She had said for decades she would do this sort of thing because her family's been involved in politics and saying similar things, and she felt like it was literally a family tradition. She thought so well of it, and it was so important to her. It outranked everything else. Her, according to this fellow, that certainly sounded as if he knew her, she was going to carry through on that family pledge to that country. And the poor guy, an email had reached him from her 3 hours before she, 4 hours before she was killed. They were in the process of writing a book on about her love of and care for Pakistan and what this all meant and how she felt she would accomplish balancing off Western interests, her beloved country, and Islam and all the forces and the Pakistani army. And they had just finished a book together, and he said, yeah, at 2 o'clock my time on the East Coast, I got an email from her that she wanted one or two small editorial changes. You know, that was the last I heard from her. But he said, I'd had the other email on file for 6 weeks now, which he has now published.
I'd love to see that. If you run across a link, shoot it to me, would you?
I just sent you the link about 10 minutes ago. That's why I was kind of quiet as I was typing one-handed.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I see it. Sorry, hadn't been to the email client. My bad.
Not to worry. Well, take care. Enjoy the rest of the evening.
All right. Thank you, David. Bye now.
See you later. Bye.
And let's see. Are you still there? Nah, you quit. So, there you have it. And, you know, there's lots of other stuff to talk about this evening, and I'm sure that we will. But this is it's a dark day. But it's also a day that shows us the meaning of courage. We are so unused after these 7.5 long, miserable years. We are so unused to seeing anyone in a position of leadership who has anything approaching courage that we are shocked when we see the real thing being exhibited. Such as was the case today. Just getting up and going on and doing your thing. We do not have that kind of leadership, if you want to use the word, in the White House. And to be honest and sort of equal opportunity about it, we don't have that kind of leadership or representation in the Congress. We just don't. Would Harry Reid have the kind of courage it takes to go out day after day and do that? Don't kid yourself. Nancy Pelosi got all upset because there were some peace activists in front of her house. Remember?
Oh, but it's the First Amendment and it's political, so you can't have them just taken away for vagrancy.
Remember that? I remember that. I remember it very well. And it sickens me. There's one human being in the Congress of the United States who has, in his life, had a contract hit out on him. And he knew it. He kept a firearm by his bedside. And he survived it. Mainly because he left office. That man was Dennis Kucinich. At a fairly young age, before he was 30. The mob had a contract out on Dennis Kucinich, and Dennis Kucinich went out and did his job every blessed day, knowing full well that that contract was there. Not George Bush. Not Dick Cheney. No, hell no. When the time came for those two individuals to put their lives on the line, when their country called, as it had called a half a million or more of their fellow countrymen who had answered and said yes, Dick Cheney and George W. Bush said, no, hell no. I ain't a-gone, and you can't make me, because I got connections. So Dick Cheney got his 5 deferments, and George Bush got his wrangle into the Texas Air National Guard, which he then deserted. And they proved themselves and branded themselves forevermore nothing more than the most shameless of cowards. And really, when you get down to it, they've pretty much governed that way, haven't they? A person who feels that they need to spy on their fellow Americans, that impulse comes from cowardice. The need to listen in to the phone call, every single phone call placed in America, comes from a place that in the human psyche that is bright, bright state road yellow. So we are shocked when we see a person dying in an effort to fulfill their own sense of personal destiny. We are surprised. I'm inspired. This woman was engaged in an uphill climb of monumental proportions. She knew from the beginning that she was going up against the people who had all the guns. She went anyway. Because trying to right the ship of state in Pakistan is a worthwhile goal for someone who loves Pakistan. Meanwhile, here in America, candidates on both sides of the political aisle will say that they are outraged. And then one of them will turn to their Secret Service contingent and say, go get me a ham on rye. No mayo, would you? The spicy brown mustard, please. And turn back and talk about the horror of it all. We have no sense in this country whatsoever of the kind of passion and dedication that motivated Benazir Bhutto. So requiescat in pace, Benazir Bhutto. And wherever it is you thought you were going when your roads and days were completed, here's hoping you're there. We'll be back after the news.
Sometimes it takes balls to be a woman. Standing up to a test while wearing a party dress. Sometimes love can be deceiving and not quietly overachieving. Oh, sometimes it takes balls to be a woman. She's a socialite, a decent housewife, and she makes some mean lasagna.
This is the Quality News Network. Today's assassination of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto is being condemned around the world. Just minutes after completing her first official political rally this morning, Bhutto was fatally shot in the chest and neck. The lone assassin then blew himself up, killing at least 20 other people and injuring dozens. Bhutto's body is being flown to Sukkur, accompanied by her husband and three children. She led the most popular political party in Pakistan, a pro-democracy group expected to win parliamentary elections set for January the 8th. Pakistan's President Musharraf declared a three-day period of mourning for Bhutto. Some political experts say supporters of Musharraf could have been the assassins, but Al-Qaeda militants could also eventually take responsibility. In San Francisco, the city's zoo director acknowledged that the wall around the tiger pen is well below the height recommended by an accrediting agency for zoos across the U.S. At just 12.5 feet high, the wall needed to be another 4 feet higher to meet the minimum recommended height of 16.4 feet. Police say there is evidence the men attacked by a Siberian tiger at the San Francisco Zoo actually may have thrown things at the animal, and at least one victim dangled his foot into the cat's enclosure. Near Seattle, Washington, two suspects accused in the shooting deaths of six members of the same family made their first court appearance today. Prosecutors in King County are preparing multiple murder charges against Michelle Anderson and Joseph McEnroe, both 29 years old. A senior Al-Qaeda militant was reportedly captured today in a battle south of Baghdad. An Iraqi security spokesman said the captured militant described himself as the defense minister of the group Islamic State of Iraq, which has been linked to Al-Qaeda. In eastern India, three towns are under martial law following violent clashes between Hindus and Christians. At least 14 churches and temples have been damaged. One death, 30 injuries are reported in that scene. In Nepal, rescue workers continue pulling the bodies of women and children out of an icy river below a bridge that collapsed on Christmas Day. And at least 120 have died in Christmas flooding on Indonesia's island of Java. Authorities are attempting to dig through the massive mudslides, burying whole villages at a time. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check business after this.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Retail shares dropped this afternoon as financial experts wondered how retailers will wrap up their biggest annual sales period. U.S. retail shopping sunk more than 10% for the week ending December 22nd. Orders for durable goods didn't rise as expected, up just 0.1%. That's according to the U.S. Commerce Department. Due to the collapse of the subprime mortgage market, Citigroup, Merrill Lynch, and J.P. Morgan Chase all expected to have to write down collectively an extra $34 billion in securities tied to the failing market. Companies ordered fewer durable goods than expected, a sign that the U.S. economic slowdown is spreading beyond the housing market. Warner Music Group has agreed to sell its music on Amazon.com's digital music store. Warner had resisted putting its songs into MP3 format. The agreement increases the number of MP3s for purchase through Amazon to more than 2.9 million. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $96.62 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold is trading at $831.80 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 192 points to end at 13,359. NASDAQ dropped 47 points. The S&P 500 off 21. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, then, let's head our the rest of the way into the swamp. It's not going to get any easier. It's not going to get any better. There's plenty of stuff here at home to be more than a little disgusted at. And, you know, let's get the disgust out of our system. No sense wandering around keeping that stuff bottled up. It's just not good for you. And with that being the case, let's take a look at a little journalism moment, if you don't care. And when it comes to that sort of thing, there's no one better than the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finerman, over at FinermanWorks.com, FinermanWorks.com. Eugene was apparently rotting his brain this morning, in other words, watching television. Breaking the news, he calls it. NBC extended the life of Benazir Bhutto by 1 hour this morning. It's a miracle. While the other channels were reporting the Pakistani leader's assassination, the Today Show did not want to disrupt its holiday theme.
Yay.
ABC's Good Morning America could delay an interview with a veterinarian and his pet pug to report on Bhutto's murder and its calamitous implications. But NBC's audience saw Ann Curry's interview with an inspirational basketball coach, followed by her visit with a chef, and then a profound discussion with Willard Scott about being home for the holidays. Really. The Today Show could have shown a little journalistic responsibility and tried integrating the news into the show, maybe. For instance, Willard Scott could have announced, and guess who now won't be reaching 100 years young? Perhaps Ann Curry could have asked the guest chef, do you know any Muslim funeral dishes? Finally, though, at 9 a.m. Central Time, NBC decided that Benazir Bhutto's current health was worth mentioning. Her death was one of three reported stories, the other two being a tiger attack in San Francisco and a miracle rescue of a 12-year-old American girl in Panama. Says Eugene, NBC should change its logo from a peacock to a dodo. Wow. No, we can't break in on the chef segment. I mean, he's a busy man. I mean, what's a dead Pakistani politician, after all? Oh, Lord. Lord, Lord, Lord. But, you know, are you surprised? I'm not surprised. Oh, by the way, this headline from the Washington Post. U.S. troops to head to Pakistan. By William M. Arkin on National and Homeland Security, beginning early next year. That's like, what, a week from now? Less? U.S. Special Forces are expected to vastly expand their presence in Pakistan as part of an effort to train and support indigenous counterinsurgency forces and clandestine counterterrorist units, according to defense officials involved with the planning. These Pakistan-centric operations will mark a shift for the U.S. military and for U.S.-Pakistan relations. In the aftermath of September 11th, Mr. Arkin writes, the U.S. used Pakistani bases to stage movements into Afghanistan, yet once the U.S. deposed the Taliban government and established its main operating base at Bagram, north of Kabul, U.S. forces left Pakistan almost entirely. Since then, Pakistan has restricted U.S. involvement in cross-border military operations as well as paramilitary operations on its soil, or so we would be led to believe. What was it? Was it in the news? Let's see. Yesterday, was it? or maybe in the last few days, that Hamid Karzai and Pervez Musharraf hugged each other publicly and referred to each other as brother? The Pentagon's been frustrated by the inability of Pakistani national forces to control the borders or the frontier area. And Pakistan's political instability has heightened U.S. concern about Islamic extremists there. Really? Reaching a different agreement with Pakistan became a priority for the new head of the U.S. Special Operations Command, Admiral Eric T. Olson. Admiral Olson visited Pakistan in August, November, and again this month, meeting with Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf, Pakistani Joint Chiefs of Staff Committee Chairman General Tariq Majid, and Lieutenant General Muhammad Masood Aslam, commander of the military and paramilitary troops in northwest Pakistan. Olson also visited the headquarters of the Frontier Corps, a separate paramilitary force recruited from Pakistan's border tribes. Oh, let's see. So we're going to go and... What was that first... Oh, yes. To train and support indigenous counterinsurgency forces and clandestine counterterrorism units. Wait a minute. Let me scratch my thinning hair for a minute. We've done that. We've been to this movie before, haven't we? What will we call them? Perhaps military... advisors? Why, yes! Yes! Oh, Bob, that's a lovely name! Let's call them military advisors. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Makes you kind of wonder if Pervez Musharraf didn't feel like he needed to make Pakistan safe for American style, for American democracy. Or at least for Americans. Does anyone know what Benazir Bhutto's position was in regard to putting American soldiers on Pakistani sovereign soil? I honestly don't. If you do, let me know. I'd be curious to find out. Because, you know, when the head of special operations, when the head of Special Forces Command, starts rubbing shoulders and eating the little lady fingers and sipping at the champagne with a brutal dictator like Pervez Musharraf, and he makes plans to put military advisors in and that kind of thing, if somebody comes along and says, you know, I don't think that's a good idea, would we in the current climate, and this is simply a question, would we in the current climate hesitate to look the other way while said brutal dictator pulled the stick out of our spokes, so to speak? Would we? Could the United States ever be part of a plan to upset the political process in another country? Gosh, no, we wouldn't do anything like that, would we? You bet your sweet bippy we would, baby. We've done it time and time and time and time and time again. And we would do it now. If nothing else, just look the other way. Or, you know, say we got some wiretapping going on, just sort of sit on the information. You know, I'm a fan of ancient history. And I can't help but look at that whole poor benighted region and cast my mind back to Alexander. It wasn't too far from the borders of what is now either Pakistan or Afghanistan, where Alexander uncovered a plot against his life and a general of his by name Philotas had already had word of the plot and deliberately neglected to bring it to Alexander's attention. He had that man who was the son of the guy who was in charge of Alexander's supply train and, in fact, his entire military rear executed by vote of his Macedonian cohort. Yes, yes, he did. Do you suppose that Admiral Olson might have a touch of Philotas in him? Would we look the other way during an assassination attempt? I think this is probably just the rankest of speculation, simply because we don't have that quality of intelligence assets inside Pakistan. We got lots of really good Russian scholars, though. We've got one for a Secretary of State. Yeehaw. But not so much on the Arabic speakers. Because, you know, they're not important. They might be gay. We can't have them in there reading, like, you know, gay porn in Arabic, because you know that's what they do. Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
You've been going on tonight, don't you?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
No. You know, I'm not surprised about Mrs. Bhutto being assassinated. As a matter of fact, I had almost, last week I was discussing this with a friend, and I thought she probably would be assassinated.
I did too.
It didn't surprise me at all. Wasn't her father assassinated as well?
No, he was hanged.
I knew that. Well, he was executed.
Yeah, the assassination by any other name is just as dead, but yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. That's
he had been prime minister, and he was ousted by another military thug who promptly hanged him.
And when I saw her security, she had no security. I mean, the only reason Musharraf is still alive is because he has ironclad security around him. I mean, he doesn't go to the bathroom without somebody taking care of his security, but that woman had absolutely no guards whatsoever that I could see.
Right, because she has now she documented well before her death the fact that repeated attempts had been made, repeated requests had been made for enhanced security, which were routinely refused by the Musharraf regime.
Were they in charge of that particular thing to ensure her security?
Sure.
Well, I think if I had been her or she, whichever, I think I would have seen to it myself that I had better protection than she did. I wouldn't have depended on him. Would you?
No, but the fact of the matter is, it's his country.
I don't care.
I mean, he's a dictator.
I mean, you know, after what happened to her father. What I'm trying to say is, you know, you got to have a reality check here. That the people supporting her. And her party now has no one to offer in the election. None. They don't have a...
No, they're running candidates. They just don't have anybody to run against him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They don't have anybody who... They really don't have anybody.
All the evidence, despite the frantic efforts of the news agencies to get it out there that this was Al-Qaeda's doing, all the evidence points squarely at Musharraf.
Well...
When you consider that there was also an attempt on his other opponent's life... In the last 2 days?
Well, look at how many attempts there have been on him.
But he has, oddly enough, survived them all.
Well, that's because of the reason, because he's had all these people around him, all these military people.
Yeah, he's got the Pakistani, it's called the Inter-Service...
That's correct.
The ISI. They are our equivalent of the CIA... And they are up to their necks in radicalized fundamentalist Islamic adherents. You know, he's got a bargain with them similar to the bargain that the Saudis royal house have with the Wahhabist Islamic fundamentalist sect in that land.
Well, I guess they've had to, you know, do whatever works in order for him to stay alive.
Well, Jim, he's a monster.
Well, there are a lot of monsters in the world, Bob.
I mean, we invaded a country We invaded a country, set up a kangaroo court, and saw a man executed based on the principle that he was a brutal dictator who killed his own people.
Who's Saddam?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, he wasn't exactly an oil painting, then, was he?
No, he wasn't. But he was certainly on a par with another man that we're doing business with by the name of Aslam Karimov.
Well, I mean, there are a number of them over there that was...
He boils his political opponents live.
He boils them live?
Yeah.
Oh, how nice.
Pervez Musharraf, well, we've seen what he's done in the cause of freedom.
Hmm.
But we've funneled how many billions of dollars to him?
Bakus, I guess. Bakus. Many, many, many. AQ Khan, where is he living now? He's in Pakistan, isn't he?
Sure he is. Living quite nicely, so I hear.
Yeah, he has sort of like a villa and everything with a wall around it and a nice vegetable garden, and he lives quite the life. And I guess he's considered to be a hero among some of those people over there because of his nuclear contributions and things of that nature.
Well, they're pretty fond of him in North Korea, too.
Yeah.
He's the father of their nuclear program as well.
Yeah, AQ Khan. And he wanted to, well, I guess he wanted to have parity with the third world nations, have parity with the West and the Soviets. Oh, God. Well, anyway.
And India, too. I mean, don't forget India. There's no love lost there.
No, it's not. It's
India. It was India's acquisition of nuclear arms that drove Pakistan absolutely sprayed roach crazy to have their own.
Well, they were at one time the same nation. They split one as Hindi and the other as Muslim.
Right. When independence was won from the British, Muslims went one way and Hindus went the other.
Right. Well, I guess they thought they had to have it, so they do. And there are a lot of smart people over there, too, not to be underestimated.
And unless I get my translation wrong, Pakistan actually translates as land of peace.
Well, that is true irony. But like I say, I'm not surprised what happened to Mrs. Bhutto because the woman had no security and.
But I admire her guts, Jim. She apparently had more courage in her little finger than the combined courage of every single American politician combined.
Well, that would be true, Bob, but courage when you're lying there in the street blown halfway apart doesn't do you any good. It's only courage that survives to make itself felt that really does good.
So you would ascribe to Falstaff stratagem then?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that. I just think that if I were in her position, I would have definitely undertaken the necessary measures to have as much security as I possibly could. And when I saw the file footage of her in this campaign, she had absolutely none. Just people walking around her in white shirts.
And yet she was determined to try to restore democracy to her country.
Well, she's not going to do it now.
No, she's not.
And the only way you can do something like that is to prevent the other person from taking the first move on you, because you can't do a whole lot when you're dead.
But she may have inspired her followers by her very unwillingness to bend the knee to a thug like Musharraf to fight all the harder to have the democracy for which they all yearn. Because she's the PPP party in Pakistan is the largest political party there, and it is also a party that is not made up of radicalists or militarists or ISI thugs. It's made up of people who get up and go to work every day. It is a popular...
Well, yeah, it's basically your intellectuals and people like that. As a matter of fact, I think on 15... Didn't he lift the martial law over there on 15 December?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can imagine that's going to be coming back pretty soon, because I understand things are pretty much in a state of, well, for lack of a better term, flux there tonight.
As was used in the case of another country, it is, to say the least, right now, a land of living dangerously.
Yeah, I think they're telling people to stay inside, and there'll be a curfew, and I'm sure martial law will follow. I don't know, but I just wish the woman had better security and had greater perspicacity or shown more
I do to a certain extent. However, I cannot criticize her for having the courage to go forward in the face of this kind of danger, because sometimes that is what is called for.
Well, maybe so, but still, I mean...
Because, I mean, we see in our country what political calculation and cowardice gets us. What have we gotten from Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi? Nothing. And they're not even faced with death threats. They're scared to death of being called liberals by George Bush. And that is enough to keep them in their bunkers. And it's sickening, isn't it, Jim?
Well, I bide my time. You know, the most popular calendar out today next to the Gary Larson calendar is the Countdown to Bush Leaving Office calendar from calendar.com.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. That's what I heard today. I can't prove it with any... I heard it. I heard it on a radio station out of the Bay Area, but that's what they're telling me this afternoon.
I wouldn't be surprised in the least.
And so I think that when Mr. Bush leaves office, some things could improve drastically. I hope they will.
So once the wolf is gone, the sheep will be brave?
I hope. And let's face it, I saw him today. He didn't look too hot.
He seldom does.
Well, I mean,
and he's been on vacation for a little while, so you can imagine that snoot's been in the jug.
Well, he just didn't look too well at all, and I don't know where his snoot's been. It could have been. I can't vouchsafe for the man's personal habits, but nonetheless, do you think that he would be without security in this country? He'd be a fool to be.
No, he's terrified of normal people.
Well, I mean,
he's terrified of people who hold signs.
Well, he's a wartime president. Ask him, he'll tell you. And you know, they've seen to it that he is very much protected and well protected. And I just wish that the people who had good and noble intentions would take the same measures. So to what has made me angry is that you're going to have certain people left alive because they have sense enough to see to it that somebody can't get to them, and other people are so idealistic.
Remember when Bill Clinton used to just get out of the car and go say hi to people? Drove his Secret Service crazy.
Well,
but, you know, he wasn't terrified of the American people the way Bush is.
They kind of cured him of that, too. The last president we ever had who rode around, really, was John Kennedy, and that stopped on November 22nd, 1963. But I just am very sorry that they could not provide, she did not see to it that she had her own security, because now that's the largest party in Pakistan, and they don't have a viable candidate. And
well, but the problem was, no matter how much security she would have had, Jim, when the military of a country decides that it's time for you to die, you either go forward or you tuck your tail and run and say, screw all the people who believe in me and for whom I've tried to do good. She could have either gone forward or spent and had probably a very, very long life and a quiet old age sitting by a pool somewhere, knowing that she was in fact a coward.
Well, I wouldn't call her a coward at all. I would call her a person who realized exactly what would happen to her, and a person who preserves their own life. They're certainly not a coward. I think they're showing some sense. You know, you can always.
But Jim, if you turn and run in the face of danger.
You don't turn and run. You make a strategic withdrawal. You retreat if you realize that the odds are overwhelming. Only a fool goes into a battle like that. You know it, and I know it.
But a hero dies but once, and a coward dies a thousand deaths,
well,
right?
Yeah, I'm not calling anybody a coward who has sense enough to preserve their own life so they can come back and fight again another day. I'm sorry.
I think, you know, we've had, how long has Musharraf been in office? 1998?
Roughly.
Is it possible that you realize at some point in time that it's not going to get any better until you start trying to change the situation? I mean, he's had ample opportunity to restore democracy in that country, and he never has. He had to be strong-armed into agreeing simply to appear in public in a business suit instead of his little military costume.
Well, of course, and you know what can happen to him too, and what happens to him when his own Praetorians turn on him, and they will. It always happens to him, Bob. You know that. Look at history.
Well, yeah, I'm the ancient history geek. I know what happened.
You know, Praetorians will turn on him one day.
I know what happened to Darius when Alexander was pursuing him. He was murdered by his own people.
Well, yeah, that's true. He was, and Alexander took care of them too because he didn't exactly think that was fair play.
Well, he put one of the people who sold out Darius, he allowed to go and live on his estate and live quite well to a happy old age. The man's name was Nabarzanes.
Well, I know Alexander wasn't very happy when he found Darius laying there by his chariot because he thought that, you know, it was sad that the man should be abandoned the way he was, at least according to tradition. Who's to know what Alexander thought and what he did? You know, it's really a lot of it.
But he did chase down Bessas. Because Bessas had been the ringleader of the murder of Darius.
Right.
That's what led him into what is now Afghanistan.
Right. But what I had hoped to have in modern times, I had hoped, when I saw the security that this lady had around her last week, that she would have done something different. And, you know, people like Musharraf have a way of being taken care of by themselves.
And that's what may happen now.
But now without her.
And the problem is that without her,
I think her loss was needless.
I think her loss was tragic because if someone does get Musharraf out of the way, as frankly he has earned, then you've got the ISI controlling the nukes, and the ISI are controlled by the really freakish part of the fundamentalists there.
Well, they're the people who are going to control the country. I mean, I don't think people realize exactly the impact of what happened today is going to be in the next couple of months.
No, there's a possibility that we may wind up paying a piper we didn't even know was playing.
Well,
because he wasn't playing loudly enough, but because we weren't paying attention to that kind of music.
Well, the thought had occurred to me that, you know, in supporting him and the people who surround him, who keep him on the throne or keep him in power, well, who knows? And if he were to cross in, you know what happened to him.
Well, he may at some point the Bush family may decide that he's crossed them, and when you cross the Bush family, party over. There's lots of people who can attest to that. I think Saddam Hussein and Manuel Noriega come to mind, Jim.
Oh, I know. I mean, Mr. Noriega, is he still in his jail cell in Miami?
He may be. He's going to be transferred to France at some point.
Well, that's the way politics is. When you cease to be of use to people and you have no longer any place in their scheme of things, then you are swept into the dustbin of history.
Well, especially with this crowd.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's a bad thing. I'm sorry she's gone. I think it was a needless death, and I'm sorry to see that she could not come back to fight again another day. That's my point. I really am.
All right, Jim. Well, thanks a lot.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. Okay, and rolling along. Hi, who have I got?
Got me.
Hey, Bob.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I need a definition.
All right.
I want to go into the Bob Kincaid definitions of perspicacity or whatever.
Perspicacity?
Yeah, perspicacity or
call it perceptiveness.
Oh, perceptiveness. Okay, so she should have been more perceptive of the guy that was going to shoot her and then blow her up?
Well, I think the idea being that she should have realized that her life was in grave danger after the first time they tried to blow her up.
The country, Bob. When they called her back, she knew her life was in danger. Come on, let's get real.
Oh, I think she did know that, and she
had a fight for her nation, and she had that courage for her conviction. Not unlike many of the men that knew they would die, they would be hung by the British crown if they came up with a thing called the Declaration of Independence. They knew they would be executed upon the British crown, crushing the revolution. They knew that they would die. So they fought for what? Their lives, their children, their faith, their whatever, country? They didn't have a country. They had 13 colonies, Bob. They didn't have anything. All they had is the courage of their conviction, just like that beautiful young lady that died just this day, yesterday. We can't even remember what Dennis Kucinich said the other day. We can't even remember what we thought the last time we spoke. Bob, we can't remember what we were talking about because we're talking about something else.
Well, that is the nature of the beast, Bob.
Well, let's talk about the beast then. The nature of the beast. The beast is this, that you don't remember what you believe in and you have no courage of your convictions. You aren't willing to die for what you believe in. You just want to get to the next doggone level, just like these dang games they sell our kids, Bob. You want them to think, oh, well, so they blew up this woman in Pakistan. Oh, well, what the heck? Ain't no big thing. Well, whatever. You know, I saw something tonight. Whatever happened to Osama bin Laden? We're supposed to be so afraid of this guy that hides in a cave in Pakistan or Afghanistan or one of them other stands. We don't even know where he's at because we have no courage to go after him because we're not after him, Bob. We're not after Osama bin Laden because he didn't do what happened back on 9/11 or whatever, you know, and Twin Towers fell down and everybody went, ooh, let's go start a war with Iraq or Iran or, you know, the other country. Oh, Afghanistan. Let's go blow somebody up. See, we're all so busy thinking about
death. You know, Bob, you remind me of something.
Okay.
I remember several years ago we lived in an old farmhouse.
Mm.
And now you live in a place where it gets pretty doggone cold, and you got any kerosene heaters?
Huh?
You got any kerosene heaters?
Oh yeah.
You ever tried to change the wick on one of those?
Yeah.
It's a kind of a booger for somebody like me who's not that inclined to, you know, that kind of work. And I remember once, Bob, I had to change the wick on one of our kerosene heaters that we kept going in the old farmhouse. And I had it, you take it apart, and there's a million pieces inside the little plastic thing. And I sat there, and I worked, and I tinkered, and I unscrewed and rescrewed, and I fooled around, and I fidgeted, and I tried, and it wouldn't light, and I took it apart again, and I got the wick repositioned. I went through this for hours on end, Bob. And I was so confounded mad by the end. I just started. I beat the hell out of it with a hammer and threw it out in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
That was not a rational response on my part.
Nope.
Should have picked up the parts, taken it down to the hardware store, and said, yeah, "Fellas, make it go again." But I was mad, and I wanted to take some retribution on that heater that had absolutely no animus toward me whatsoever. It wasn't doing anything. It just, you know, it needed a new wick.
Bob.
But I destroyed that damn thing. I cast reason to the four winds, and I destroyed it. And I wound up costing myself a couple of $100 in the process because I had to go out and buy a new one.
Bob.
No, wait. I'm not done.
Okay.
Is there any difference between my personal response to that and the collective response of the United States in the form of attacking Afghanistan and Iraq after September 11th, we just wanted to stomp the crap out of something.
That's right.
And they're going to look back at us in 25 years, in 50 years, in 100 years, if there's still a United States. They're going to look back at us and they're going to say, those people went nuts. They lost their minds. They completely set themselves at sea from their own reason.
You found that. What was that? They were always looking for the magic pill, the silver bullet. You know, that thing that tells the truth. You found it, Bob. You said it tonight. Just now. You stomped the hell out of something that didn't do nothing to you because it was an inanimate object. Just like Afghanistan.
Yeah, we treated them so we wanted it. We wanted to kick something, and we kicked something.
Right.
And we didn't care what we were kicking.
That's right.
And now I'm looking at this story out of the Washington Post that we're sending military advisors to Pakistan in January. And I really do have to ask, Bob. I can't help it. I really do. If somebody was a threat to our being able to do that, and we really, really wanted to do it, what would we do,
Bob?
We would eliminate that threat, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. And that's the truth. See, that is the power of what you're saying. You say it with conviction and with the truth that you know to be truth. It's not something you concocted. You didn't drag it out of some think tank in Washington. You just saw it for what it was.
And well, sometimes the curtains part and the mist blow away and things look a little obvious.
Oh yeah, well
I don't credit
to the guy behind the curtain.
Well, I don't have the magic eight ball on the Ouija board here. I mean, this
and
is
without them doggone flying monkeys everywhere.
Yeah, but I mean, some of this is easy.
No.
Would we look the other way at something like this if it meant that one of our plans would get to go forward?
Why are we doing what we're doing right now, Bob? That's the question I got to ask everybody in the chat room.
Well, you know, there's another question out there. Remember a couple of months ago, Bob, when Senator Obama said that, you know, he'd just send troops into Pakistan and get it and get this taken care of. Just take it. Well, you know, it's time to answer that question again.
Okay, invade another country?
Yeah.
Yeah, for what?
I mean, he did say that. I don't have this bass backwards or anything, do I?
No, you've got it straight on. You can't keep invading people, occupying people, with no real direction. If you have to invade a country, why should you invade another country unless they attack you? And by God, Bob, I'm going to tell...
For national security, Bob.
I'm going to... No, don't forget your national security. You can...
No, that's the fraud that this all gets handed to us under. That's the gravy on top of the shoe leather.
Secure. You can be very secure, okay? All you have to do is put every National Guard armory on the borders. I don't care. Along the Canadian border where they're attacking us every day, or along the Mexican border where they're attacking us every day. But every United States Marine, United States Army, the Air Force, everything, if anybody crosses that border, just send out a B-2 or a BF-2 or a B...
I get your gist. Yeah,
get
sure.
Get all the bombs. And if you see one rabbit, you see a cockroach crawling across your border, you drop a nuclear bomb on it. And you destroy it right there at Amarillo or maybe up there at Minot, North Dakota. You just drop some bomb on that cockroach as it's trying to cross your border. Bob, you can secure your borders. And the oceans of the earth don't protect you, of course, because the other guy's got nukes. But, Bob, we gave the Pakistanis, we gave the Pakistan people the capability to create nuclear weapons, Bob. We gave it to them. We taught them how. We gave them all the ability. They got their covert stuff that maybe they snuck something in there. I don't know that. All I know is that we, the United United States of America created the first nuclear weapon on the planet of Earth. No other country ever created a nuclear weapon, and we are the only country on this planet that has ever used a nuclear weapon.
All too true.
Another nation. Okay? That's the truth. Now let's just talk the truth now. No suppositions or propositions or explanations. Let's talk the truth. We, the United States of America, the people thereof, every one of us, our fathers, our forefathers, and us, we are them. They are us. Are they not?
Sure.
Your father is the man that, produced you, right? And you are a product of that man, and therefore you are a product of whatever he did. And by God, Bob, no other nation, not the USSR, not China, not Japan, not Pakistan, not Saudi Arabia, no other nation on this earth has ever used a nuclear weapon against another nation except the United States of America. And if you can't face that fact, then don't face me. He says, I cannot take liars. And I hate somebody that thinks, oh, gee, they're after us. By God, Bob, we've been after them since what?
Yeah, that's the thing. You chase them and chase them, and they turn around and start chasing you. Oh, they're after us. Yeah, I know. Hey, Bob, I got to roll on. I got another call I got to get to, okay?
True, Bob. True.
All righty.
She had it coming. She did not.
Nope, not at all. No. And I don't think that was the point. We'll talk to you later, Bob, okay? Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's see. Hi, you still there?
This is Juanita.
Yeah, hey, how are you,
Juanita?
Me?
Okay. Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, good deal.
Talking about being safe, if you think about it, she was not in charge of the country or the army. And how many people could she get to guard her? How many people did she know would be safe to guard her?
Well, not only that, but, they were under martial law until fairly recently. So how many people could have guarded her without being rounded up? She was...
Right, there you go.
She was in danger of being rounded up herself. And that's
right.
This is an act of extreme political courage, and that's why...
I agree with you.
That's why I admire
totally
it.
I totally agree. Uh-huh. Yeah, what we got, he has to go and work really deep and safe,
Yeah. Meanwhile, here in this country, we don't have with very few exceptions, we have no one in our political representation that has 0.1% of that woman's courage. We just
right.
don't, and that's all there is to it.
I agree with you. I really do, because I don't see how she could have been guarded, and I think she had to do what she had to do. She did, she did the right thing, and she paid the price. And you know that when somebody is for we the people, they're the ones that gets murdered because the powers that be don't want them in there. They don't want anybody to help we the people. We've got plenty of people over here that we've lost. Are you there? Hello?
Been here all along.
Okay, I thought, maybe I got disconnected.
No, you'll hear something go click if that happens.
Anyway, that's my opinion on it, and I wasn't really surprised. Things like that are just not.
Let's get it straight. I wasn't surprised when I heard this morning. I wasn't surprised in the least. But the reason I wasn't surprised is because General Pervez Musharraf is a dictator and a thug and a murderer and a tyrant and all the things that we say that we loathe, but we keep writing him checks for billions upon billions of dollars.
Of course. Of course. I wanted to bring up what we were talking about. You were talking about yesterday about Polk County School Board.
Yeah, sure.
that's something I've been wondering about, and I told somebody one time this, they were talking about wanting to have the creationism taught in school, and I said, whose interpretation?
Sure.
That's the thing, and I'm sure you know that pretty much every church has got a different interpretation of it.
I guess there's some things they can agree on. But there's a lot of churches that believe that that no longer take the poor translations that we have of ancient Hebrew writing. They no longer take it literally, and good for them, because it's not meant to be taken literally.
There's a certain type of... I know I studied metaphysics for a long time, and that everything is spiritual. It might have happened, but maybe it didn't, but it's spiritual, all spiritual. And I do believe there's a lot to that too, but then you got other people that some churches do teach evolution. They believe it corresponds, you know, with God.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of inclined toward that. Not that I know a whole lot about evolution.
Well, my only point where that is concerned is that you can subject principles of evolution to scientific inquiry and scientific mm-hmm. proof.
Well, I'm learning more about that, you know, from hearing people talking about it on, you know, like on shows like yours. But, because I always heard theory, you know, and theory, you know, that's not been proven. But what I was saying was that the different denominations and churches and people, I've heard all kinds of explanations of creation. There's some that do believe the 6,000 years. And there's some believe 4,000 years. And then there's some that say, yeah, you know, we've been around a long, long time.
But those people who believe, you know, the young earth or the not as young earth crowd, Juanita, whether it's 6,000 or 4,000, I honestly can't imagine any way of communicating with those people, because they're fools, all right? They're just fools. Because rocks, you know, rocks have no... interest in lying. Okay, the really old dates that we get with regard mm-hmm. to the age of the Earth are based upon the decay of certain isotopes, and they decay at a known and quantifiable rate, and they don't do it differently on Thursday than they do on Tuesday.
About the logic of it, you know. Oh well, let's say we want creationism taught in school, but whose interpretation?
Precisely, and that's why the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster got involved.
I read that.
Because, you see, the Church of the Flying...
I don't know what the heck y'all were talking about for a while. And
the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster has every right to have its vision of intelligent uh-huh. design taught right alongside the other versions. And what you're going to wind up with is a classroom that never gets any teaching done.
Another teaching that I've heard is that there are two stories of the creation in the Bible, and
there are
that the first part, you know, where he created male and female, is just says male and female, he created them, you know, like at the same time, and in our image, he said in our image and likeness, it says.
But some people don't want to be scholars of it, Juanita.
I know.
And they
just
want to swallow it whole. I know.
Saying, if you're going to have something taught in school, what are you going to teach?
Yeah.
How are you going to decide? Because you're going to have people that say, no, that's not the way I believe. You know, everybody's going to have a different interpretation. And I'll tell you something. When I was in school, they tried to bring the study of the Bible into school. You know, have it like as a choice, what do you call it? Not when you go ahead and when you have to take something and you don't.
Oh, electives.
And you know what? Can you believe this? Polk County, they wouldn't allow it. They said it might offend other religions. They would not allow it. And I look back and I thought, let's see, we sure gone backwards since then.
Well, backwards.
You know what I'm trying to say?
I'm making myself
clear that to say, when they say, I just like to hear.
Well, it's
and
best
I'm
to
start asking it too.
Sure, absolutely, you should. because it's best, you know, what it boils down to is it is best to leave philosophy and theology in the philosophy and theology department and leave science in the science department.
Right. And
you can never get a square answer from them, these people who want to talk about intelligent design, no matter whose intelligent design they want to teach. If you simply ask them the question, who designed the designer?
Yeah, well,
then it all falls apart, because then it becomes very much like that Hindu creation myth where the earth rests on the back of an elephant that's standing on a tortoise and the old, probably apocryphal story of the woman who asked the Hindu sage, well, what do the tortoises stand on? And he answered her and said, madam, it's tortoises all the way down.
Well, I hadn't heard that one, Bob. Well, if there's no God, then where did all this stuff come from?
Well, that's their counter argument.
Right.
And if you think about it long enough, it will lead you to, you will find yourself at the conclusion of that argument, and it'll all make perfect sense. It does to me, but it's hard to explain to people, and it's hard to get them to. You just can't. You can't get around to it except by yourself.
And there's another question that I would like to ask if I got the opportunity. I know Huckabee recently said that he wanted to bring our country back to being a Christian nation the way it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know, when was it ever a Christian nation? Because some people say the 50s. Well, what about what the blacks were going through then?
Sure. And what about women's rights?
But did you know of the turn of the century? I've got a medical book here, and it said that women were not even considered people.
Well,
you know that?
Sure, because women have, through the vast majority of recorded time, been considered property. And one of the guests on Peter's show, I think it was Archbishop Bruce Simpson, pointed out that part of the marriage debate is that goes on in this country now that is not properly addressed is the fact that these defenders of families are actually defending a property transfer. Marriage was initially created, and it really doesn't matter which culture you look in, because you can find Eskimos doing it, you can find the ancient Japanese doing it, you can find the ancient Middle Easterners doing it, the ancient this and the ancient that. It was all a matter of transferring this property in exchange for that woman, and the wedding ceremony was literally a title exchange.
Mm-hmm.
You gave me all your junk. Here's this woman, and you own her now.
Yeah, it's another block you get, like the creationism situation, you know. Now, there's a preacher on TV that he's from Arkansas, and he teaches the two creations, and he teaches different teachings from some of the others. In fact, I find him pretty interesting. He's very right-wing as far as he believes in the war and all that junk. But anyway, he's a paleontologist, and he said, oh, yeah, this earth is millions of billions of years old or however, you know. He studies the paleontology. He has that.
Well, like I said, rocks have no motive to lie.
Mm-hmm.
And radioactive isotopes
and
decay at a given rate.
Isn't time relative? Or is that the right word? You know, there's no such thing as actual real time. Isn't it when you go out in outer space, the time goes?
No, that's a function of speed. And I can't really go into it because I don't have the skill set to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
But we do know that. Well, for instance, that little clock that's down in the corner of your computer that tells you what time it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you tell it to sync, there's a function in there where you can tell it what clock you want it to sync up with.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And one of those is an atomic clock. I've got one hanging on the wall here too, because we have to know exactly, and I mean pretty close to exactly, what time it is for when things start.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, the way the atomic clock works is it is based on a decaying radioactive isotope that decays at a set rate, and it doesn't change based on whether it's spring or fall or Monday or Wednesday or anything like that. It just decays at a given rate. Isotopes do. That's how we know Well, carbon 14. Okay, you can date things with carbon 14 because carbon 14 is a radioactive isotope of carbon, and it and while a thing is alive, it takes it in. It takes in carbon 14 constantly. Every living thing on the planet. But when it ceases to live, it ceases to take it in, and then the amount of carbon-14 decays over a period of time, and you can measure the rate of decay of carbon-14 and tell how old something is.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is a technology that's existed for probably 50, 75 years now. There are other radioactive isotopes that are used... and I think one of them's potassium. Maybe if he's in the chat room, Lottie could help me here. But there's another isotope that decays over at a different rate that decays at a much slower process and can be used for dating rocks. And it doesn't have to be a living thing like has to happen with carbon-14. So that when you look at a rock and you take a sample of it and you measure it, it will decay at a given rate. And you can say, yes, this rock is 2 billion years old. And so when you find fossilized bones inside that rock, you know how old the bone is by its association inside the stone.
Yeah.
Now, what these people who want to say that the Earth is 6,000 years old do is first they say, don't believe it. That's the devil talking. All right.
No.
Apparently, the devil knows. The devil is considerably better at science than the creator of the universe, which I find amazing. But what they then say is, well, the devil put those bones inside those rocks confound. Wait, Juanita, wait. The devil put those bones inside those rocks to confound the unbelievers.
Oh no, I can't believe that. That's unbelievable. I never heard that one either.
Well, it's true. I mean, you know, this little creationism museum that's doing hand over fist business in northern Kentucky near Louisville or whatever, Maysville or whatever it is. They've done millions of dollars in business, and they've been open for less than a year. And they've got a diorama there that shows Adam and Eve having a picnic by a stream with a Tyrannosaurus Rex in the background.
They're deadly
in earnest. They think that really happened because they believe that the Earth is actually younger than the recipe for beer or writing.
And that's
what you're getting down to. And that's why I say, I don't know, I can't have a conversation with them because they're idiots.
No.
They're idiots, Juanita.
No.
And anybody who would advocate intelligent design is equally so. Because the fact of the matter is, all you got to do is look around you and you can see... You can see it in action. These yahoos who believe that the Earth is 6,000 years old will nonetheless go and get a flu shot because, you know, they don't want to get the flu this year. But they don't want to deal with the fact that that flu vaccine has been manufactured from an evolved flu virus.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, I mean, personally, I think all the fundamentalists should check off a little box when they go to the doctor, and we'll give them 12 years ago's flu vaccine, and maybe we'll get rid of them that way. Because they won't be able to fight off the disease. Look, a cow, a dog, any domesticated animal, you can trace back and you can see the effects of our intentional genetic manipulation, and you can see the effects of our unintentional genetic manipulation. Horses started out as teeny tiny little. Not Chihuahua or Dachshund size, but they weren't big animals. They were bred. And through an evolutionary process, got to where they are now. Corn, for heaven's sakes, the sweet corn that we have at outdoor picnics in the summertime. Sweet corn started out 10,000 years ago as a grass in central Mexico that if I showed it to you right now, you would not recognize as being corn. It was literally a grass. It was something that you'd hit with your lawnmower and wouldn't think twice about, called teosinte. But it was deliberately manipulated by human beings into corn.
I didn't know that either. Wow.
And the thing is, all these idiots in intelligent design and creationism have to ignore all of that stuff in order to go on living in their sort of Peter Pan little fairy tale world.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I mean, there's tons and tons and tons of it. You know, it was Darwin observing the different shapes of beaks of birds on Easter Island when he sailed with the Beagle that led him to think. And when he got back to England, the industrial revolution was underway, and he noticed that pigeons over time, from generation to generation, went from being white or gray to being black to match the sooty walls that they sat on in order to hide from predators.
Uh-huh.
It's not rocket science evolution.
Well, see, I just never was taught that in school. When I went to school, the girls took biology and the boys took chemistry. You know, that's the way it was. As far as science goes, and I enjoyed biology, but mm-hmm. we didn't study anything like that. I don't know whether it wasn't allowed or what.
It probably wasn't allowed. Please remember
that. You might be right.
But
they did have the foresight to not allow the Bible to be taught. And of course, when I was, you know, in school, I wanted to take it, but I realize now that was probably they were probably pretty wise.
Well,
to do that.
You know, consider that I hate to say it because I'm a product of it too, but Southern school systems have been lacking as far as being on the cutting edge is concerned. In Florida, for instance, part of the reason this whole stink rose up in Polk County is because the new Florida science curricula will actually mention evolution. It never has to this day,
oh,
but
yeah.
Now it will, and that is what's getting these little fundamentalists all, you know, bees in their bonnets and burrs under their saddles.
Yeah, well, I believe the whole education system needs to be changed. I'm hoping that they'll change it. It seems like our governor has some new ideas that we have now. Of course, he's supposed to be gay, so if they find that out, like,
well, but
he does, will be right.
Well, that really, I don't think, will enter into the equation as long as he throws the occasional bone to the Republican faithful. And,
well,
but fortunately,
but if he doesn't, if he tries to be a true Republican and see some indications of that, you know, they will definitely bring that up against him, and the people will revolt against him.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is here. I mean, the school system that you're talking about now, they reflect a lot of the viewpoints of many of the people here.
I don't doubt that in the least.
Yeah, yeah. And I see God in a different way than a lot of people do, but that's because of the life that I've had, and I definitely believe in evolution of the soul and the spirit, because I've had it, and I thank God I've had it. You know, I've missed out on a lot. We missed out on a lot of wonderful people, and I lost my best friend on the 23rd. She was black, and she and I would have never been friends when I was growing up.
No,
but
no.
We met later in life, and what a blessing I had.
Well, it's like it's like this network. I have had the privilege, and I do mean privilege, Juanita, of getting to know, without ever meeting face to face, so many wonderful, wonderful human beings, brilliant minds, people of committed spirit that I never would have known otherwise. I would still be, you know, I'd just be sort of sitting here twiddling my thumbs or, I don't know, out chopping wood or something. Had we not developed this network, and if people didn't see to it that
thank
this
God
network
you did.
Continues, yeah.
I thank God you did.
And I would, you know, I would be much the lesser person without knowing you, Juanita, the news ninjas, without mm-hmm. knowing the other hosts that I have met as a result of this, without knowing the listeners, without getting the emails and the chat room stuff and the phone calls. You know, we were running reruns over the Christmas break, and people heard those a few times, and there were a few phone calls here saying, you know, are you guys live? And I said, no. And they said, who is this? I said, it's Bob. And they said, wow, okay. And
yeah,
just
I called you one time, and yeah, I got you.
And just and we chatted for a few minutes, and people are thrilled when they find this network and they find out the kind of conversation that we can have.
I tell you, it makes my heart dance with joy because, you know, there's such a, I mean, it's so terrible on TV, the so-called news. I mean, it's so awful. And I'm just so thankful for y'all. I mean, it makes my heart just dance with joy to hear the viewpoints and a lot of things that you think. I think the same thing, and I came into them on my own, you know. And then to find other people who think a lot of the same things I do.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But anyway. Whatever. But I lost my little friend.
I'm so sorry to hear
she
it.
She was, yeah. I'm going to tell you something, coincidence. We didn't meet till about 13 years ago, and we met on a job, my last job I had, and anyway, we started calling each other on the phone, and we talked nearly every day till she died. She died, but she died in a nursing home. She was going there for rehab, and she said, I'm going to be home by New Year's. But anyway, she and I were born about 15 miles apart in the same year in Georgia on farms. She was raised up there, and I was raised in Florida. And I just thought, well, what a coincidence. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And she at one time lived up in Atlanta when she went to Martin Luther King's church. And she talked about how sweet they were. She said they were the kindest, humble people. Now, see, that's what I call Christian, Bob.
Yeah.
They're not haughty. I don't see Christianity in what we've got leading this country today at all. I don't see.
Well, no.
See any kind of goodness. I just see evil.
And there's no Christianity in a Huckabee, and there's certainly none in a Romney. And in most mainline Christianity, I just took a look at the clock, though, Juanita, and I realized we're past news time. But
okay.
It's always a joy, my dear. It's always a joy.
Okay, hon, and Happy New Year if we don't talk again.
All right. You take care now.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And if you want to get in on the conversation, you know how to do it, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on, if you've got your own sort of long-distance unlimited calling plan, 304-658-5453. Saves us a little bit of money here at the studio, and that's always a good thing. Learn it, know it, use it, burn it up if you want to, and we'll be back after the news. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. And I am Bob Kincaid.
When you go on Kevin Drips, you're stuck right out in nature. Forage in the forest like a primate. Chopping tools instead of hot blades. You're coming for a finger, supposed to show you're not a wild beast. You can hear the noises at nighttime.
This is the Quality News Network. Al-Qaeda is the number one suspect in today's assassination of former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. According to officials with the Bush administration and a watchdog group on global democracy, both sources say that Al-Qaeda has the most to gain from Bhutto's demise. Al-Qaeda's Taliban ally, who publicly threatened Bhutto, is another potential suspect. Today's assassination of the former prime minister is being condemned around the world. Just minutes after completing her first official political rally this morning, Bhutto was fatally shot in the chest and neck. The lone assassin then blew himself up, killing at least 20 other people and injuring dozens. Bhutto led the most popular political party in Pakistan, a pro-democracy group expected to win parliamentary elections set for January 8th. In reaction to her death, angry Pakistanis have taken to the streets, throwing rocks at police, setting cars on fire, and blocking streets. Police fired on one crowd, killing two people in the city of Kharpur, and in Peshawar, tear gas and batons were used to break up riots. Bhutto's body is already en route to the town of Sukkur, Pakistan, for burial next to her famous father, also a former prime minister of Pakistan, who formed the Pakistan People's Party. Bhutto's burial will be conducted sometime within the next 24 hours at the family's ancestral gravesite. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called for Pakistani peace and national unity in reaction to her death. President Bush blamed extremists trying to undermine Pakistan's democracy. In San Francisco, the city's zoo director acknowledged that the wall around the tiger pen is well below the height recommended by an accrediting agency for zoos across the U.S. At just 12.5 feet high, the wall needed to be another 4 feet higher to meet the minimum recommended height of 16.4 feet. Near Seattle, Washington, two suspects accused in the shooting deaths of six members of the same family made their first court appearance today. Planning to file a federal lawsuit, the National Rifle Association is seeking New Orleans residents whose guns were seized by authorities in the midst of the chaos following Hurricane Katrina. And more U.S. law enforcement officers were killed this year than have died on duty since 1989. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
More than 3 million American taxpayers will have to wait until February to receive their refund checks. The IRS is placing the blame on Congress and their late fix of the alternative minimum tax. Congress put a one-year freeze on growth of the AMT last week, which shields some taxpayers, some who make just $65,000 a year. Volvo is recalling 125,000 trucks sold in the U.S. World's second largest truck manufacturer says there's a serious problem with the main circuit breaker in the lighting system. Apple and 20th Century Fox will soon announce an agreement permitting consumers to rent the film studio's recent releases by downloading them from Apple iTunes Store. Warner Music Group has agreed to sell its music on Amazon.com's digital music store. Warner had resisted putting its songs into MP3 format. The agreement increases the number of MP3s for purchase through Amazon to more than 2.9 million. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $96.62 a barrel, gold at $831.80 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 192 points to end at 13,359. The NASDAQ dropped 47 points to end at 2676. The S&P 500 off 21 points at 1476. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Well, because I got into a good conversation, hour three is a little bit foreshortened. It's about 22 minutes past the hour, which leaves us something on the order of 35 minutes or so of top-notch conversation radio to engage in between now and the beginning of the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, namely Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold. And Peter, unless I am wrong, and he'll have to correct me if I am, has what I believe will prove to be a fascinating guest this evening. Yes, indeed. And I will leave it to him to tell you who that guest is. But I think you'll want to be along for the ride on that any way that you slice it. Now, in the chat room, if you've never been to the chat room, you're really missing out, especially during show times, if you have time to be around when shows are live, whether that's Guy James or Mark Levine or me or Peter or John Fox, the horn section, whatever. Head on RadioNetwork.com chat room. We do not charge you for participating in the chat room, just like we don't charge for archives or anything else. We are listener-supported conversation radio, and that means that your voluntary contributions to keep things going are, in fact, what keeps it going. If you recall, we had a goal this month of something on the order of $3,500. We're not there, but December's not over yet. So, you know, I'm not without hope. But we have we've done exceedingly well, and I thank you all who have stepped up and done your part this month, as you do every month. There's nothing more I can say than this doesn't happen without you. So, you know, thank you. Thank you very, very sincerely from the bottom of all of our hearts and the tops, too. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. You can use PayPal for your contributions. Or if you wish, you can click on the link there that says Contact Us, headonradionetwork.com, Contact Us, or Contact. I'm not sure how it's phrased, but it's there, and it's pretty obvious. And it'll give you the snail mail address of our post office box where you can participate that way if you prefer not to use PayPal. So, again, many, many thanks. And hopefully we'll go back to our little $2,000 monthly goal as of January, but we had things that had to be caught up on in a big way this month. And like I said, we're not there yet, but we have done considerably better than we would have hoped otherwise. Now, onward, upward, outward, and around and about. I would think we have given the Benazir Bhutto story and Benazir Bhutto's own courage, I would hope, its proper respect. Because courage like that is very, very rare in this country. As I noted at the beginning of the last hour, thanks to the observations of Eugene Finnerman, we know that NBC couldn't be bothered to break in on a segment on a celebrity chef or some dude and his dog or a deep conversation with someone about the weather or something, you know, to just couldn't be bothered. Well, just in case you thought that was an anomaly, I've got another one for you, and I know it drives some of you absolutely out of your tree when I talk about sports, so please don't consider this me talking about sports, because I'm not. There are, however, within the listening audience, within the reach of my voice, there are people who are fans of the New England Patriots football club, and who very much hope that they can complete an unbeaten season so as to get the Miami Dolphins to just shut the hell up. And that opportunity comes Saturday evening as New England tees it up against the New York Football Giants, as they are called, in East Rutherford, Virginia. New Jersey. Kickoff is scheduled for 8:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it had been scheduled to be carried only on the hapless NFL network. But now, thanks to the miracle of modern media ownership, you'll get a chance to see that game on NBC. Oh, but wait, there's more. It's a Ginsu commercial. On NBC and CBS. It will be the first NFL simulcast game since Super Bowl I. That's a long time ago. Now, why we need to have it, I guess NBC and CBS both wanted it, and one has the franchise for, they left Fox out in the cold, didn't they? Because Fox has the NFC generally, and CBS has the AFC generally, and of course this is a cross-conference game, an inter-conference game, if you will. Why am I going on about this? Because some of you are probably, you know, going over to, I hate sports so much I could pluck my eyeballs out.com right now. I promise you, this has nothing to do with how I feel about that football game, or if I feel about that football game, because frankly I don't. I believe that NFL stands for No Fun League. But at any rate, it will be carried on CBS and NBC, as well, I guess, as the NFL Network, all in a big simulcast with play-by-play done by Chris Collinsworth and Bryant Gumbel. Okay, so what? Well, I, for one, think that this is incredibly overrated. I don't think it is, as NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has said, a historic moment. He said, quote, "We have taken this extraordinary step because it is in the best interest of our fans. What we have seen for the past year is a very strong consumer demand for NFL Network. We appreciate," because you see, only about 40% of the homes that have televisions in them have the NFL Network on their cable system because of a peeing match between the cable companies and the NFL. "What we have seen for the past year is a very strong consumer demand for NFL Network." "We appreciate CBS and NBC delivering the NFL Network telecast on Saturday night to the broad audience that deserves to see this potentially historic game. Our commitment to the NFL Network is stronger than ever. Thank you very much." Historic? Really? Historic? I mean, I guess it's a historic game if you think, you know, in the sort of short span of things, and, you know, it's 30 years from now and you're drunk out of your mind in a bar. Who broke? I got one for you. I got one right here. Who broke the Miami Dolphins record for an undefeated season? Who did that? Oh, was it the Packers? Nah, you moron. It was the Patriots. You idiot. So I guess it's historic like that's historic, or they'll put Tom Brady's jock strap in Canton or something. I don't know. I'm getting this from a Washington Post story by, what's his name here? By Mark, I gotta get glasses, Mark Maskey, sports columnist. Photograph they've got of him on the blog makes it look like he's about, you know, 13. And he writes at the bottom in this sort of smarmy way, "Of course, the game isn't exactly interrupting must-see TV. The Saturday night lineup is traditionally one of the weakest for over-the-air networks. Here's what was scheduled for CBS and NBC on Saturday. NBC, Dateline NBC, and Law and Order SVU. Ah, but here's the kicker. CBS had scheduled good night and good luck. You've seen, I'm sure, by now, good night and good luck, 2005 George Clooney vehicle about Edward R. Murrow and Joe McCarthy. Shot in black and white, it is a profound piece of film work. It's a very good movie. And it is a movie which, what, no matter how low the ratings are, it would have been better had, you know, 2 or 3 or 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 million Americans who had not seen it before actually seen it. It would have been a good thing. Because it does contain, what was that word Roger Goodell used? Yeah, historic. It does contain potentially historic information. Because when you see the brilliant, brilliant job done by... Okay, somebody quick, help me. I put that on a brain cell that I killed. The guy who plays Edward R. Murrow. Dadgummit. Played Two-Gun Sid Hatfield in Mate 1. Great actor. Anyway, when people see this film, they understand what was at stake in the earliest days of television when Murrow was trying to use the power of journalism, you know, for good, to take down filth like Joe McCarthy. When you see this, and when other Americans see this, David Strathairn, there we go. He plays Edward R. Murrow. It stands in stark relief against what passes for entertainment-flavored news in this era. But not to worry, Bush administration. Not to worry, Repiglicans. Not to worry. Not to worry at all. Because CBS will not be showing Good Night and Good Luck on Saturday night. No. They will be showing the potentially historic game between the New England Football Club and the New York Football Club as broadcast live from New Jersey. And I think that is a demonstration of a real lack of priorities in this country. Good night and good luck indeed. See who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
I just called to tell you it was David Strathairn.
Oh, okay. Well, you were
right behind you, buddy. You were just too quick on the draw for me.
Well, I didn't. I was hoping the brain cell wasn't dead, Jim. But
I knew better than that. But anyway, he also played Tom Cruise's brother in The Firm.
That's true. Anyway, he doesn't do bad work, and this may have been his very best. Did you see the film, Jim?
I've got the DVD.
Yeah. So.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, I'm not. I don't agree with this sort of snide little out of the corner of his mouth commentary by this sports writer for the Washington Post. I actually think America would be better off with Good Night and Good Luck running this Saturday night on CBS instead of this potentially historic football matchup.
Of course. Listen, as a boy, I remember that we used to watch See It Now every when was it Sunday night? I can't remember.
To be honest, it predates me. So
it does well, and I know my parents talk during the war, my mother especially, this is London.
Oh, yeah, this is London. Yeah, that phrase by itself is a part of broadcast history.
It's really a funny thing. And our own ambassador over there wouldn't even stay in the ambassadorial residence because he might get hit by a bomb.
Yeah, was that Joseph Kennedy Sr.?
Kennedy.
Yeah.
That was Jumping Joe. He was just the one thing. He was jumping something else. Well, I can't think. Well, I'm like, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, let's don't and say we didn't.
Right. But, I mean, that's an excellent movie. And, you know, George Clooney, it's just amazing with the stuff he's done.
You know, one of these days I've got to make a legitimate effort to get him on this program because I think he'd be fascinated with what we're doing here because these kind of things.
Oh, it'll be long distance, I believe. He's there. You know where he first got his start? Got his start on Golden Girls.
Well, yeah, there's that, absolutely. And, you know, family connections with Rosemary and his daddy being mayor of Cincinnati and whatnot, or uncle or whatever.
He really got on when he played Booker as the supervisor on Roseanne. And when George, as the supervisor at Roseanne's factory, got fired, guess who they hired to take his place? He ran them all off. Fred Thompson.
Fred, yep. Wow. Talk about 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Well, really, I mean, you know.
We'll get to Kevin sooner or later.
Well, I mean, that's the reason when I heard Fred Thompson, I thought, you know, I remember how nasty he was, and they could not have picked a nastier person to play the role he did. And he did, you know, that show. Now, Fred Thompson's done some good work in Hollywood, too. I mean, he always plays the part of a good commander or something like that, you know, like he did in Hunt for Red October.
Yeah. Well, you know, authority figures. He winds up playing authority figures.
He does. He's good at that. But, yeah, but George Clooney, it's just amazing. I mean, he's gone from being in comedy to Dusk Till Dawn to this thing with...
I'd forgotten about that.
Boy, that one was just...
And God knows I've been trying, too, you know, I mean...
Well, I mean, Quentin Tarantino has a strange but warped and twisted mind. I think he's the brains behind that operation, but anything you see that he does is going to be kind of bizarre, but yeah.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the Everest of any performance that George Clooney ever turned in, perhaps, you know, short of his role in this film, is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He's an incredibly accomplished actor, and, you know, he just keeps out of the...
Not a fop man. I'm a Dapper Dan man. Dapper Dan's what he used. Don't want no fop.
There you go. And, you know, it's strange that our best actor is Johnny Depp. He's another one. You know, he lives in France.
Yeah.
You know where Johnny Depp's from?
Kentucky?
That's it. You got it.
That's
it. Little boy from Kentucky.
Oh, man, you're giving the really old brain cells a workout tonight, Jim.
I doubt that seriously, but, you know, I want to say something else about Mrs. Butler. I mean, you know, whenever you're building it, trying to do better, you're building an ideological society that's going to help people. You have to use bricks to build it. And, you know, bricks that are, well, not too hot and not too sharp make very few walls or build very few buildings, and the dead make none. I just hate to see prodigy wasted. That's my point.
I understand, but I don't think she was at a fork in the road. I think she was at a T in the road.
I guess so. Well, I've always believed in it. You know, the poet says, "Do see it, decorum est." I don't quite agree with that. You make the other poor son bit die for his country.
Yeah, and well, you know, I love that poem. Because of the way it ends, you know, people would not say "Dulcet decorum est."
I know.
All right, Jim, you take care.
All right, out here.
Bye now. Oh, by the way, speaking of Mitt Romney, which we weren't, he's got a new ad running. Oh, Willard Romney has a new ad out there. I know Eugene's going to love this because Eugene's just such a Willard fan. He's got a new commercial out featuring a man named Robert Gay, and it's about a little lost lamb, a runaway. His daughter, whose name was Melissa Gay. And again, I guess this is my read to you tonight because this is just too funny not to share. Chris Kelly over at Huffington Post says... here's how her earthly father, Robert Gay, tells it in the new ad by Willard Romney over ominous headlines and images of New York City so scuzzy they make Death Wish look like Wonderful Town. My 14-year-old daughter had disappeared in New York City for 3 days. No one could find her.
My business partner stepped forward to take charge. He closed the company and brought almost all our employees to New York. He said, I don't care how long it takes, we're going to find her. He set up a command center and searched through the night. The man who helped save my daughter was Mitt Romney. Mitt's done a lot of things that people say are nearly impossible. But for me, the most important thing he's ever done is to help save my daughter. And Chris Kelly writes, from the Negroes. Doesn't that just warm your heart? Every word is perfect, not just the way it builds to the reveal. And the name of that boy was Abraham Lincoln. But the way its oblique construction allows the story to sound more homey and less like two multimillionaires freak it out. My business partner sounds so much better than identifying Gay as a managing director of Bain Capital. Makes it sound like he and Mitt ran a startup dry goods store. He closed the company. Yes, and he threw his apron on the ground, too, and turned that closed open sign around the front door of the office tower. You lock up, Clem. Bob and I are off to New York before his daughter pulls a train. Tell my wife if she needs me, I'll be at the Port Authority punching a Puerto Rican in the face. He set up a command center. Sounds so much cooler than he made our employees hand out flyers and waited inside by the phone. That doesn't concern me. I think taxi drivers overrated. And I'm also not interested in the statement, Mitt's done a lot of things that people say are nearly impossible. That's just bizarre. Like what? Put 5 tennis balls in his mouth at one time? Solved the riddle of the Sphinx? He invested other people's money in Staples. No, why I'm bringing this up, Mr. Kelly says, is because of this statement. But for me, the most important thing he's ever done is to help save my daughter. There's no denying that Mitt Romney made his office workers wander around New York City for 3 days asking runaways if they were or weren't related to anyone rich. That really happened, unlike his march through Detroit with Martin Luther King. But where was Melissa Gay? According to the Boston Globe, quote, it turned out that an unidentified boy had taken Melissa to his family's home in Montville, New Jersey, on the night of July 11th. They called police after seeing television reports about the case, ending the search. She'd been there for a couple of days, just sort of hanging out. Yes, Mitt Romney is so strong he can find missing heiresses in New Jersey by looking in New York. The teachable moment here is the post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy. After this, therefore, because of this, Mitt Romney looked for a girl and then she phoned home. Therefore, Mitt saved her. Why stop there? The next month, NASA turned up evidence of ancient primitive life on Mars. Maybe Mitt's search did that too. The Yankees beat the Braves in the World Series that year, and the name of the man who made it all possible was John Wetland. Or was it really Mitt Romney? So did Mitt Romney save Melissa Gay? I don't know. But you certainly can't say he didn't not save her. If she'd been in any danger, which she wasn't. Besides, no one said he saved her exactly. Robert Gay said he helped save her. Helped save. The exact same Weasley phrase twice, even while choking up. Chris Kelly notes it would be creepy to suggest someone else came up with that line. But maybe they helped. What Mr. Gay meant about Mitt. I could hire a private detective, but because I'm a multimillionaire, when I misplace my kids, Mitt Romney makes people look for them for free. How to use helped save at home. In 1987, I helped save baby Jessica from a well in Texas by getting drunk in Montreal with my buddy Stan. I love good writing like that. Chris Kelly, whomever you are,
kudos to you. Mitt Romney is so powerful, he can find girls in New Jersey by looking for them in New York. But, you know, there's not going to be any... The lunacy just goes on and on and on. Have you seen... Here we go, talking about a photograph on radio, you know, dancing about architecture. Have you seen the photograph of Mitt... the Reverend Mike Huckabee out in Iowa in the sort of mown down cornfields all covered in snow with his little Elmer Fudd cap on and his blaze orange hunting attire? Just sort of standing there in the field? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you see the pullback photo with all the photojournalists and video journalists and print journalists and radio journalists huddled in a sort of parabolic arc around him, one of them with a great big boom mic hanging over his head to catch every pronouncement from the lips of the Reverend Huckabee. Let's see, it's a pod of whales, it's a gaggle of geese, a school of fish, a murder of crows. How about a servile of journalists? A servile of journalists. Pitiful. Just pitiful. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if you noticed the other day, but, you know, Tom Tancreton, the congressman from Colorado who was convinced he was going to be president of the United States and stop the evil brown people, the guy who in his last debate appearance said that his first, you know, act in office would be to pardon a couple of rogue border agents who shot a guy in the back. Yeah, him. Well, he gave his endorsement to Willard Romney when he bailed out of the race. He said, Willard Romney is the man that America needs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's only one interesting little hink or kink or whatever you want to call it to this process. Willard Romney is the one Mexican border-crossing immigrant that Tom Tancredo likes, apparently. Or Willard Romney's family. Because, you see, Willard is the first in his family in quite some time to be born in the United States. Uh-huh. Mitt Romney's father, George, was born in Chihuahua, Mexico, in 1907. He was the son of Gaskell Romney and Anna Amelia Pratt. Three generations of Romneys lived in Mexico because Miles Park Romney, a polygamist, moved the family there in 1884 because he wanted to stay married to all of his wives when polygamy became illegal in Utah so Utah could become a state. Mm-hmm. He bugged out of the United States, said, screw you to America, and fled to Mexico so that he could have extra wives like God wanted him to, so that in the next life he could populate his own universe. Really. Took all his wives, Miles did, took all his wives and all his children with him across the southern border. In his 1902 book, The Story of the Mormons, author William Alexander Lynn states that, quote, the Secretario de Fomento of Mexico related that the laws of this country do not permit polygamy and that the contracts for the establishment of Mormon colonies in Mexico required the same, which means not only that Miles Romney was a polygamist in the United States in violation of the law, he was also a polygamist in Mexico in violation of the law. He was also, by virtue of his polygamist status, an illegal immigrant in Mexico. Gaskell and Anna Romney were married in 1895, and they lived in Chihuahua State until the Mexican Revolution in 1912. Relative Junius Romney negotiated with rebel leaders to get women and children out of the colony for their safety. Anna, with Mitt's father George in tow, fled across the U.S. border. Illegal immigrants! A short time later, Gaskell Romney, like many Mexican immigrants before and since, covered hundreds of miles under a hot sun, also crossing illegally into the U.S. in New Mexico. No kidding. You just can't make this stuff up. But of course, if we ask him about it, then that would be bigotry. Now, George Romney, who was a Mexican-born immigrant, did go on to become governor of Michigan and figuratively marched with Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. He opposed the Vietnam War. He ran for the Republican nomination for president in 1968, losing to Richard Nixon. Wow. So, you know, Tom Tancredo has just thrown his endorsement to, what do we call them? Anchor babies? Is Willard Romney an anchor baby? Because I got an anchor baby story out of Arizona here, too, that I don't guess I'm going to get to. Well, let me see if I can find it real quick. Because it's pretty disturbing. We don't like brown people. Well, not we, but I mean, you know what I mean. Republicans generally despise brown people. And new legislation is under consideration in Arizona that would compel hospitals to not, wait for this, I'm not kidding, to not issue birth certificates for the children of brown people, you know, Mexicans, Guatemalans, Hondurans, Salvadorans, Ecuadorans, Panamanians, doesn't matter, they're brown. Really. Not kidding. This isn't a joke. This is not a drill. It is disturbing in the extreme. But that's the America that they want. Arizona voters may, in fact, be asked to decide whether to prohibit the state from issuing birth certificates to children of non-U.S. citizens and require hospitals to check citizenship of parents of newborns. Said one woman, Dahlia Montgomery, who filed the paperwork, "They are awarding the full privileges of United States citizenship on all persons born in the state without regard for the clear and equal requirements of federal law that a person born in the United States shall citizenship be bestowed shall not be subject to any foreign power and owe direct and immediate allegiance to the United States." Huh? Never draft legislation on acid, Ms. Montgomery. The measure would permit a birth certificate to be issued to a child whose mother is a foreign citizen and whose father is a U.S. citizen if the father formally acknowledges parentage and agrees in writing to financially support the child until adulthood. Getting to be a pretty damn mean place, this. You know what I mean? It just is. And that's it for tonight. Thank you for joining in. Thank you for making this the great deal of fun that it always is, even when we have to go through the swamp. Thank you to Peter Godbold on his way with Strictly Confidential. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer in Sydney, Australia, working hard to work out some bugs, I do believe, that he's having to deal with himself. Thank you to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Many thanks to all of you. And to you, most importantly, who share your time and who share your contributions to keep this little experiment in civil conversation going. Thank you. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Al-Qaeda is the number one suspect in today's assassination of former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. According to officials with the Bush administration and a watchdog group on global democracy, both sources say that Al-Qaeda has the most to gain from Bhutto's demise. Al-Qaeda's Taliban ally, who publicly threatened Bhutto, is another potential suspect. Today's assassination of the former prime minister is being condemned around the world. Just minutes after completing her first official political rally this morning, Bhutto was fatally shot in the chest and neck. The lone assassin then blew himself up, killing at least 20 other people and injuring dozens. Bhutto led the most popular political party in Pakistan, a pro-democracy group expected to win parliamentary elections set for January 8th. In reaction to her death, angry Pakistanis have taken to the streets, throwing rocks at police, setting cars on fire, and blocking streets. Police fired on one crowd, killing two people in the city of Kharpur, and in Peshawar, tear gas and batons were
used to break up riots. Bhutto's body is already en route to the town of Sukkur, Pakistan, for burial next to her famous father, also a former prime minister of Pakistan, who formed the Pakistan People's Party. Bhutto's burial will be conducted sometime within the next 24 hours at the family's ancestral gravesite. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called for Pakistani peace and national unity in reaction to her death. President Bush blamed extremists trying to undermine Pakistan's democracy. In San Francisco, the city's zoo director acknowledged that the wall around the tiger pen is well below the height recommended by an accrediting agency for zoos across the U.S. At just 12.5 feet high, the wall needed to be another 4 feet higher to meet the minimum recommended height of 16.4 feet. Near Seattle, Washington, two suspects accused in the shooting deaths of 6 members of the same family made their first court appearance today. Planning to file a federal lawsuit, the National Rifle Association is seeking New Orleans residents whose guns were seized by authorities in the midst of the chaos following Hurricane Katrina. And more U.S. law enforcement officers were killed this year than have died on duty since 1989. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new Internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
More than 3 million American taxpayers will have to wait until February to receive their refund checks. The IRS is placing the blame on Congress and their late fix of the alternative minimum tax. Congress put a one-year freeze on growth of the AMT last week, which shields some taxpayers, some who make just $65,000 a year. Volvo is recalling 125,000 trucks sold in the U.S. World's second largest truck manufacturer says there's a serious problem with the main circuit breaker.